I thought because we're emphasizing UW in this class, that perhaps I start with that and then maybe come back to some other things. Would that be a good way to do this?
I'll do my best to answer whatever I can.
Okay, that's the best thing. You came here in 1990, is that right?
Right.
Where were you?
Well, the year, actually it's 89-90.
89-90, okay. Where were you teaching before you?
Okay, I was teaching in Tel Aviv at the Israel Conservatory. And another municipal conservatory in Israel. I was teaching at the Jerusalem Music Center, which was founded by Isaac Stern about 15 years ago, I think, or 10 or 15 years ago.
Okay.
And actually the Jerusalem Music Center combines many different activities, but one of the major activities there is the musical and especially the chamber music education of the most talented Israeli musicians. So I was part of the faculty there, coaching chamber music. The center has also a beautiful, it's in a beautiful location in Jerusalem and is providing master classes by the greatest masters in the world who are invited to work with the Israeli young musicians. And I took a pretty active role in bringing masters to give master classes, working in some master classes myself. So,
What age of students?
At the center, at the Jerusalem Music Center, it was mainly pre-college students. At the conservatory, I was dealing a lot with pre-college students. I was teaching 2 years at the Tel Aviv University. I was substituting for the cello teacher there who was my cello teacher. His name is Uzi Wiesel. He was a member of the Tel Aviv Quartet. And this is when I dealt mostly, I mean, that was the most concentrated time that I dealt with college students. Later, privately, I was teaching college students too. It's very interesting because Israel is very small and has a lot of talents, but there's room only for two music schools in the university level. So there's one in Tel Aviv, one in Jerusalem. Until the cello teachers there retire or die, there's no chance for anybody to actually teach on the university level there. So I got really interested in teaching very early, but I just faced the Israeli reality and actually I was very happy to do that for a while. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to do it all my life, but I was very happy to help build a good solid foundation of young cellists. And I'm very proud to say that I succeeded in that. I actually really started from scratch when I came back from my studies here.
You mentioned you were there this past over Christmas and
heard
some of your students.
Oh yeah. Well now I go at least once or twice a year. I go, they invite me to give either master classes or seminars for cello teachers.
Okay.
Because I'm getting very involved in the pedagogical aspects of cello playing. And So I was there during Christmas. I gave two short seminars for cello teachers from all over the country, I mean, from the north, from the south. And I was invited to go now back in July to work with the Jerusalem Music Center. They really reduced their activities now to mainly 10 days summer, intensive summer seminar, summer course.
Rather than a full year.
Well, they still work on a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
The groups that they form,
mm-hmm.
their chamber music group,
yeah.
work on a weekly basis, but the crown of their activity is the 10 days in the summer. Which I'm always very happy to take part. In the past, I had some conflicts with my Massachusetts job in the summer,
mm-hmm.
but luckily I worked out now that I'll teach partly for the Jerusalem Music Center, and I'll teach only 3 weeks in Massachusetts
okay.
this year.
So what specifically brought you here to Madison? Was it a person, or you just saw an opening and applied for it? Or?
Well, it's funny because I think I was just ready for a change. It might be a midlife crisis or whatever it's called, you know. I'm 46 now, so what was I was 42. That's the age, probably. That if you look in the books and you ask the psychologists, and, I don't know. I was just really ready. In Israel, I had 3 full-time jobs, plus the Jerusalem Music Center, which was part-time, and plus other activities, adjudicator here founder of chamber music series there, which took
mm-hmm.
a lot of time, but
mm-hmm.
was not anything at the beginning. It was not
mm-hmm.
something official,
mm-hmm.
and I even hardly got paid for it at the beginning. Later, it provided me some income too.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So I was just ready for a change.
Mm-hmm.
I think it also the fact that I did not have that much chance to work with that many graduate students
mm-hmm.
or even undergraduate students because of the situation in Israel led me to the point that I wanted to try something else.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Madison was the first place that I applied to other places just as, I took it as more of a sports.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I sent an application without thinking that much about it, but here it was really funny because I heard it 2 days or 3 days before the deadline for the applications, and my friend who called me to Israel and informed me about this
mm-hmm.
opening, and I, luckily we have now this American Federal Express
yeah.
or something
yeah.
that
yeah.
you can send your stuff in 48 hours
uh-huh.
any place in the world.
Yeah.
And I sent my stuff, and then I was asked to come for an interview,
mm-hmm.
for which I had to pay my overseas flights, and they really could pay only my domestic flights. But again, I took it as sports. I didn't think that. Okay, I thought, okay. We spend so much money on so many different things. I'll spend this $1,000 on
mm-hmm.
on this adventure.
Yeah.
So I took it really as an adventure, not. And here I am.
Yeah. Okay. How are the students here? In a more of a university setting, a little more, maybe more structured in terms of classes and stuff than what you dealt with in Israel or not? Or how are they different? That was more
the
of a
students themselves?
Yes.
Well, it's really hard to say.
Mm-hmm.
I I don't look at students as, usually it's hard for me to look at students as part of a certain structure,
mm-hmm.
conservatory structure, university structure.
Mm-hmm.
I look at students as individuals. And the, over there, the, we, I had students who were extremely interested in intellectual and scientific and academic studies,
mm-hmm.
with their great love for cello,
mm-hmm.
and I had some others who were not interested in anything else but to make music.
Mm-hmm.
Here too, I have a great variety of students. So I really don't see that much difference in as far as as the as the how do you say the vision of what they want to do, or
mm-hmm.
or the goals,
mm-hmm.
or the current state.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that I can say is, in Israel, in a way, but it has to do with the fact that before I came here, it was already 10 or 12 years after I came back, and I really built my class. The basic level of
mm-hmm.
playing,
mm-hmm.
I felt was, in general, higher
mm-hmm.
than I had here, at least at the beginning. I'm still struggling with real basic things that I feel that need to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. let's see. So, you see your role as a teacher as, when you deal with the students?
Well, I really want to give my students, first of all, my great passion for music and for the cello, to help them with that, with good foundation and facility to be able to express whatever they have inside.
Mm-hmm.
I maybe last.
I haven't
forgotten. So we were talking about your role as a teacher, and you were talking about.
Yeah, I need to provide them. I think here at least,
mm-hmm.
I feel more than I needed there at
mm-hmm.
the beginning. Later
mm-hmm.
in my. I need to gather some of my vision of what I see in music
mm-hmm.
as an expressive way of communicating,
yes.
And how to be able to do it most efficiently. I mean, the best way. Actually, this is my main role, because the whole purpose of playing, I think, and giving concerts is really communicating,
mm-hmm.
and letting other people get a feeling of your feeling, of my feeling,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
what I feel about a certain thing,
mm-hmm.
what I think about a certain thing, how I want to communicate it.
Is this interest in communicating? What led you to become involved with incorporating types of movement into performances?
Well, this is the later stage.
Yeah, okay.
Well, during my studies, well, let's go back to the beginning.
Sure.
Well, I started late.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was 14 when I was given the cello. I was raised on a kibbutz.
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar with the term. Kibbutz is like a commune way
okay.
of life where everybody shares everything.
Mm-hmm.
And people, it was a tiny little kibbutz in Israel on the hills of Nazareth.
Okay.
I mean, yeah. About 2 miles from that, maybe something like that, 2 miles from that. Uh-huh. And it was a very isolated place.
Mm-hmm.
So we, the kids, we lived there together. We shared. It was like a dormitory. Okay. We spent time with our parents only mm-hmm. in the afternoon when they came back from work and so on. And it was a communal way of decision about everything.
Mm-hmm.
So people, the founders. My parents were the founders of the kibbutz, so they really had to decide how they were going to educate their kids, and it was in their hands to decide.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it was very early stages of those decisions, because it was just we immigrated. I mean, I was born in Hungary, but I was one when my parents came to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in 1948 when the state of Israel was just created.
Mm-hmm.
So everything was new, and anyway, it was a trivial thing to give the kids some musical background,
mm-hmm.
but the best that they could come up with was really teach us recorders.
Okay.
So we all had a little recorder
mm-hmm.
Sessions. And it was part of the curriculum at school. So actually, I played the recorder, and we had a little recorder orchestra, and that's the most we could.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was 13 or so, I mean, the educational committee or something
mm-hmm.
decided that they were going to bring somebody to test and audition the kids and see who might be able to study a more serious instrument. So,
uh-huh.
So they brought this pianist from the from the provincial town of Tivon, which is a tiny little place. You really have to think. And I look back, it's so provincial, but these were the realities of those
mm-hmm.
days.
Sure.
And they brought this man to gave us all kind of rhythm and pitch and stuff. And then he said, well, he told the educators, well, you can give him something to do. So, I mean, they were given the permission to give me something. It's not that they came and asked if I, but they said,
mm-hmm.
if I want,
uh-huh.
I can
okay.
choose something. And I uh-huh. wanted it very much. I really. And then they asked what I wanted to study, and I said cello.
Okay.
Had you
heard a cello before?
Yeah, well, on the radio.
On the radio, okay.
And actually, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with Jewish traditions. I mean, when boys are 13 years old, they have what is called bar mitzvah,
mm-hmm.
so
mm-hmm.
on the kibbutz, too, we had
yeah.
the bar mitzvah.
Uh-huh.
Most kids got presents for the bar mitzvah. The greatest present was bicycles. I mean, I remember my
okay.
age group, they got a lot of bicycles.
Mm-hmm.
I got a record player. I wanted, and I got a few records from relatives. I
uh-huh.
mean, if somebody asked what to bring me,
uh-huh.
My parents told me I would appreciate the record. So, and I had some records. I had Dvořák with Casals. Actually, my first record was given to me by a very distant relative, and that was the New World Symphony.
Oh.
It was I still remember, it was Kubelik conducting. Anyway, so they told me, well, cello is too late at your age. Why did you take a wind instrument? Few people might know me by now. I'm very stubborn in a way. So I want the cello.
Uh-huh.
So they say, okay. They say, well, and they got me a cello
uh-huh.
and sent me to another, the closest town, a bigger town was Haifa.
Okay.
And I was studying with a teacher there who was, he was a cello teacher, but was teaching guitar too. So I should tell Javier that I studied with a guitar teacher. He was very nice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was a nice guy, very low key. But it's not him that made me look for it. I really needed that. It was
mm-hmm.
just a need. I needed to express. But I remember all my peers of my age group, I mean, from different other places,
mm-hmm.
for instance, from different kibbutzim, I mean,
mm-hmm.
were much more established already. They had their way and their... all my peers already played very difficult repertory with orchestras. They played, I remember my another cellist from another kibbutz not too far from mine was playing the first movement of the Dvořák with orchestra when I really just started playing scales and so I always felt like behind the wagon, running after, and trying to catch up
mm-hmm.
with things. But it was not. It was always something inside me that I needed to do.
Mm-hmm. And so, how did you get interested in? Were one of your teachers at that time the one that got you involving movement?
Oh no, that's much later.
That's
I'm
much
sorry.
Later.
Wait.
No.
Okay. I need. Oh. So okay. So.
Keep talking.
Okay. Then I went to Tel Aviv,
yeah, yeah.
I mean after 3 years in Haifa, when the teacher parted, he had done his job
mm-hmm.
and I should
mm-hmm.
move on.
Mm-hmm.
We tried with a teacher, Uzi Wiesel in Tel Aviv, but he was extremely busy and again I was very stubborn, I didn't take a no for an answer. I mean he didn't hear me yet,
uh-huh.
but he knew that. And finally, he was convinced to. Most of his students were on a tour with a youth orchestra in Europe at that
mm-hmm.
time, so he was. He said that he'll take me until the, while they are gone,
okay.
and see how things work.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I had a few lessons, and then he said that, he agreed to teach me twice a month. So I had two lessons a month,
mm-hmm.
every other week,
mm-hmm.
and actually, this is how I would really drive, take the three different buses to go from the kibbutz to Tel Aviv, which took me probably about three and a half hours each way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I always had difficulties on the instruments that I had to cope with. This is why I think I can help students also, because I dealt with a lot of those difficulties. Only later when I arrived to Bloomington after I finished my studies in Tel Aviv, and I was with Starker for 3 years, I started really getting extremely interested in teaching and really identifying ways to do things on the cello the easiest way.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when I started really getting very interested in the movements, because what we do on the instrument is we move on the instrument, and the more we know how to move on the instrument, the better we can express our feelings and ideas. So and it's been now 20 years since that I've been really interested in this. And lately, I mean a year and a half ago, I had a neck injury, and I got I got involved with the Feldenkrais method. In parentheses, I've been very open-minded for. I was doing Alexander technique during my undergraduate
mm-hmm.
studies in Israel, and
mm-hmm.
and was pretty fascinated by that, and then I went to see an old lady in Israel once a week just to learn about the body and efficiency of movements not related to the cello. Sometimes I went with the cello to her and asked questions.
Mm-hmm.
But after my injury, I looked at it also almost as a matter of survival, really to learn more and more and become more and more knowledgeable about the way the body functions and how I can make things easier, especially in playing. And I find that it's not only for people who have back or neck problems. It's valid to everybody, because I certainly believe that the easier you feel and can move, and the more vocabulary of different movements you have in your system, the more you can express your ideas, and more efficiently you can express your ideas. So this is what really led me to, in my, also in my pedagogy courses and in my teaching, I mean, all my students know that we deal a lot with trying to figure out how to do things in an easier manner. But I started looking at movements also from an artistic point of view, not just a tool to make my life easier, but certain movements can become very expressive. Then it led me to look into different mediums, and I think that like dancing, or and the latest is mime, because mime is really quite minimal, and I look at it as maybe one of the most efficient ways of expressing with movements, because there's no word that mime don't talk. They cannot add their voice to their expression. They don't really dance, they don't do big things, they just express with minimal movements. So they really need to know those, to feel actually those movements best and be able to express with minimal movements. So my project for next summer
that's your project.
Yeah, for next summer I got a grant from the graduate school to do a recital for cello, piano / harpsichord, and mime. Now it's the whole idea is really not to accompany the mime, but to collaborate and see how the mime with his movements can influence my way of expression with sound, and how my sound can influence his movements. And actually, I make sounds by moving too. I make movements while making sound too. And I keep talking with my students lately. It evolves all the time in my mind. For instance, when we talk about the left hand, we talk a lot about choreographing a movement and letting the notes fall into the general choreography. So this is where the link is, and it'll be very interesting for me to deal with it. And actually, I'm very lucky. I'm very happy now that the chair of the theater department at Amherst College is very enthusiastic to collaborate with me, and so I'm going to work with him next summer on this project with my pianist that I've been working with in the last 3 summers, who's teaching at Dartmouth College and Amherst. So.
We were talking about your project with mime, and I'm wondering what types of repertoire are you doing? Are you using new pieces or pieces from the standard repertoire, or
both?
Okay.
Actually, we're still debating with exactly what pieces. Well, the way I imagine it is, I would like to play pieces that really have different moods in them, and are not too long.
Okay.
So we're talking about the Debussy sonata, Stravinsky Suite Italienne, the Hindemith solo sonata, and Steve Demsky offered to write a piece for us for this particular project. So he's going to write probably about a 10-minute piece for cello, harpsichord, and mine.
So harpsichord.
Yeah. And I was thinking maybe to open the whole evening with a Bach gamba sonata with harpsichord, just as an opener,
mm-hmm.
without mine.
Without mine.
Yeah.
Right.
Just to have to give it to him, nice. I'm always very interested in programming and looking for interesting things, and this is where why I actually started my chamber music series in Israel, which I could do only 2 years. I mean, actually I did the first year, which was a great success,
mm-hmm.
and then when I found out then I planned the next year, and then I found out about Madison, and I immediately turned the directorship to somebody else.
The programming thing is interesting because your recitals are always so interesting. They're not the usual come out and play lots of pieces. So let's do something interesting. Last year you had the box. You did the dancer.
Well, the whole idea about the dancers was that it was more educational,
mm-hmm.
for me. Since we are in a university and the faculty concert series here is on one hand just an artistic venue.
Mm-hmm.
Nice word, huh?
Yeah.
But it's also educational play, so I was more interested in showing my students really where those movements in the Bach suites come from.
Mm-hmm.
And they really come from the dances. And each dance has its own character. So I was interested in really combining the two and showing how it really relates to the movement, again, to the dances.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because this way it came. Of course, Bach did not write it for a cellist to accompany dancers, but it of course came from the dance, and each dance has its own rhythm and character, and it's important to know those dances.
How did you collaborate with someone from the dance department?
Yeah, Anna Nassif, and
yeah.
So we collaborated,
uh-huh.
and it was an interesting experience.
What were the reaction? What was the reaction from the audience?
It was very mixed.
Very mixed. Okay.
As expected.
Yeah.
Next time, I think if I'm ever going to deal with it, I'll really make sure that the dance part is. Will bring exactly the feel of the rhythm in each dance.
Mm-hmm.
But my feeling was that it was the dance part of the performance was more concentrated on, I should put it in, on sculpturing the stage. Then really dealing with the minute details of the dances and the rhythm of the
mm-hmm.
dance.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not so sure that it was most effective. The idea was very good, but the final thing was had really mixed reaction.
And your latest recital, we had 14 cellos and 10.
Yeah. Well.
Talk about that.
Well, I'm very interested always, maybe it's because of my background in the kibbutz,
mm-hmm.
is collaborating and doing things together and responding one to the other. This is why we didn't use the conductor. And you know, of course, it would have been much more together with the conductor. It's, you know, the defaults of, I mean, the drawbacks mm-hmm. Of this performance were more like ensemble, I think. But I could, for now, I could sacrifice that a little bit for the feeling of mm-hmm. the players. And it, again, it involved many of my students and other people who love to make music. Mm-hmm. And I tried to deal with it in a chamber music manner, that we listen to each other mm-hmm. and we react one to the other, instead of being directed what to do and commanded by somebody how to do certain things.
And what was the response to that? What kind of comments did you get from?
Well, everybody of course talks about the sonority. I'm very, very interested about, in especially the cello. Well, I'm not biased at all, but cello is the nicest instrument in the world, so. It really has such a range of expressions, and so the sonority of a group of cellos, when it's really worked out, I think it's marvelous, and it's really moving,
mm-hmm.
and that was, I think, the strongest reaction that I got from both players and audience. I mean, what a sound! Oh, gee, what a sound! So rich and so that. And my whole idea about cello playing is, and music making is, let the instrument express.
Mm-hmm.
Don't force the instrument. Don't impose on the instrument, but let it express and see what you can get out of the instrument rather than what you can stick into the instrument. So I was quite pleased with the result, mainly of the sonority and mm-hmm. sound.
Did any of your teachers in your university study do this kind of thing?
Well, Pariso had a cello choir, not on an ongoing basis, and it was really nice and. Actually, he has a nice recording of one kind of Stickelach, the kind of little pieces, plus bigger pieces, which is very professional, of course, and I know how they work on the recording. They really spent a lot of time, and I think it can become a nice vehicle to unite cellist in the community, both mm-hmm. students and other cellists in the community, to,
mm-hmm.
to collaborate and really do something together,
mm-hmm.
create something together, because a nice, rich, big sonority of cellos can be done by only, can be created only by getting together many cellists and play together. So, this is something that I think I got from Starker, the idea of really trying to collaborate with colleagues and in many different ways and see what you can do together, because if you can do things together, the power of the results
mm-hmm.
can be much stronger than each individual trying his own way and conflicting with others.
Mm-hmm.
So in the cello, the cello choir is part of this general idea.
Mm-hmm. And you're involving people from the community as well as
some students who mm-hmm. were coming to study with me
mm-hmm.
from Green Bay
mm-hmm.
and Milwaukee mm-hmm. and they were interested in collaborating with it. Of course, those who came from long distances could not make all the rehearsals, but it was fine because it was mainly an event. It was like mainly almost an event like a party,
mm-hmm.
of challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, let's see what we can do together.
Another question I had, on another thing you often do on your recitals, which I don't see so often, you do a lot of contemporary music, and particularly unaccompanied contemporary music. Is there any reason for that, or
I usually don't look at pieces as contemporary,
uh-huh.
Baroque, classical,
uh-huh.
quote unquote.
Uh-huh.
Romantic, post-romantic. I just look at things. If something is grabbing me,
mm-hmm.
it grabs my attention and interests me, I like to spend time with it. If I'm not grabbed to a piece, maybe it has to do with my nature of being a little stubborn. I cannot be forced to do things that, at least at the moment, I don't feel
mm-hmm.
like doing. So
mm-hmm.
I'm actually not looking for a contemporary. Privately, I'm not feeling very comfortable with cycles,
mm-hmm.
and you know the whole. I like to see what feels like. Fits together with something else,
mm-hmm.
how it can create a nice event as an evening,
mm-hmm.
a whole evening. What can add to this evening that is still missing there? And I'm looking for a piece that can add to the overall. And of course it's very subjective. It's something that I feel about, and it really interests me how I can build a nice evening. This
mm-hmm.
People come and get either a variety or something that has certain kind of a theme, certain kind of something that they can relate to, not just okay we heard that Dvořák Rondo, or we heard the Shostakovich sonata, which was interesting,
mm-hmm.
and how the whole evening is combined and united.
You do that when you have students pulling recitals together. Do you try to get them to think that way?
Well, with my students, I have always to involve educational aspects and artistic aspects.
Mm-hmm.
Because certain students need to work more on certain kind of repertoire
mm-hmm.
than others. And their concerts are also like a result of their educational progress. So not always, I mean, it's the decisions there are not always just artistic, but a lot of times educational. And my role here, I look at my role here mainly as an educator, not who might be able to give all also those who are not going to become professional musicians some tools to deal with certain things in life that they wouldn't have gotten the chance to deal with otherwise. So if I can offer that chance, I'm always glad to do it.
You mentioned that a few minutes ago, you teach the cello pedagogy and literature courses here. And what types of things do you do in those courses that would be different from what you do in the studio?
Okay, in the studio, I have the privilege in the pedagogy class, at least for. Until the end of the course, to deal mainly with the mechanism part of the playing,
mm-hmm.
which again draw me back to the movement
mm-hmm.
and how you do things.
Mm-hmm.
And the pedagogical approach of how you achieve it with students, how you present it to students.
Mm-hmm.
How you present it to students of different ages or different temperaments. How you approach a student. What you do with them. How you make them do what you want. And my belief is, on one hand, a teacher has to know what he or she wants to achieve. But the way to convey to somebody else has to be different from each person, from one person to the other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really has to be to be reflected by the nature of the student. So you cannot deal with certain students the same way you deal with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to take each personality as a unique personality that, and find a way to convey your beliefs about music making, about playing the cello, about life
mm-hmm.
to this particular student. And it doesn't matter to me if a student is the most intelligent in the world or the most sensitive or one who is mainly preoccupied with engineering but loves music. I mean, it's challenging for me as a teacher to find a way to each student and see how I can convey my belief about all kind of things. Cello playing,
mm-hmm.
music, life,
mm-hmm.
everything.
When you teach these courses at the National String Workshop,
mm-hmm.
when you're dealing with people who during the year are teachers, do you find differences in the classes
when
you teach here?
But actually, first of all, it's much more concentrated there.
Mm-hmm.
And we have only
yeah.
5 days. So, and I see them every day for 5 days,
mm-hmm.
and we have to do it very fast and very
mm-hmm.
concentrated. I really believe in not pushing too hard
mm-hmm.
on students and letting them absorb the information and the ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Because especially with playing, everything involves the nervous system. The nervous system cannot absorb things fast.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to teach the nervous system certain things from the tiniest movements that the nervous system can identify. If you pour on a person just information, you see the whole point of pedagogy, my pedagogy class is not just to give theoretical information and intellectual information, but really make each one of my pedagogy students sense with his own system exactly what I mean. So usually in my course at the university, I take time until I make sure that each student really absorbs the idea
mm-hmm.
to his or her system.
Mm-hmm.
In the National String Workshop, there's no time for that, so we go much faster, and they just get kind of an organizational method of looking at the cello
mm-hmm.
and the cello, how to approach the cello, how to teach the cello. But during the workshop, it's mainly an organizational thing in
mm-hmm.
the minds of the participants.
Mm-hmm.
During the year here at the university, there's more time really to feel the details and have them absorb the ideas with their own system.
I'm looking through my questions here and thinking we've covered an awful lot of things here. Do you have any closing comments or things you'd like to address? We haven't talked about, especially about your experiences here in Madison.
Well, first of all, I think Madison is a great, great town. And it has a lot to offer. I think the School of Music has a great potential. It basically is a great place to work. What I wouldn't like to see is that this place gets stagnated. That things are taken for granted. I think that everything in education and especially in the arts and in music have to do with evolution.
Mm-hmm.
So things really evolve, and the more open-minded we are here to nuances, to differences, the richer we become. If we try too hard to structure everything to a very limited, in my mind, narrow-minded ways of thinking, I think we risk our future. So the more open-minded we are to changes, to differences, I mean, this is what this, I think, I hope this whole country is all about. And I don't know, maybe I'm pathologically optimistic person, but maybe I'm not realistic, but I certainly believe that the future really is in looking always for better future, for better ways of doing things, without forgetting the past, or without forgetting where you come from, or what you carry with you as a
mm-hmm.
person. Because I cannot help reflecting my past in my present.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot help reflecting the fact that all my childhood I had to deal with the horrors of the Holocaust
mm-hmm.
that my parents
mm-hmm.
went through.
Yeah.
And this
yeah.
is part of me. Maybe this
yeah.
is the reason why I needed to express myself, and the best way
mm-hmm.
I could find was in music.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a fact that I cannot escape from. This is part of me.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of denying it or escaping from it, I mean, I can communicate with that fact
mm-hmm.
and look for the future and see how I can collaborate that path and see how the future can be nicer than
mm-hmm.
what my parents went through, and how I can help the younger generation feel a fuller life, more meaningful life, a life that can really express and communicate nice and interesting ideas.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.